Hey guys, welcome to episode 174 of the JV Club with my guest Tara Platt. Guys, I'll waste no time in telling you, I think she's marvelous. I hope you enjoy this episode. I also want to remind you that towards the end, you will hear a reference to a fundraising project that Tara still has a little bit of time left on for a book she's working on. And I would encourage you to pay special attention to that section and contribute if you would like to. And speaking of contributions, I'm going to segue right into some shout outs because I wanted to thank, first and foremost, Aleem for surprising me with a donation to my PayPal account, just as a thank you for the podcast. I don't really ask you guys to do that ever. I think I did like twice at the very beginning, and I don't even really know how you remembered to do that, Aleem, but thank you so much. And also, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right. What a great thank you to butcher someone's name after they surprise you with something. I want to thank everyone who came to the New York Comic Con signings and when I was hanging out in the Courtyard booth and our Beyond Belief and Sparks Nevada and improv shows. All the shows were totally sold out and you guys were wonderful. So if you listen to the podcast and I met you in New York, thank you, thank you, thank you. That was an extraordinary trip. I just had such a great time. In particular, I want to thank Nicholas and Natalie who came to New York Comic Con. I want to thank Holly for giving me an amazing book that I've already started reading. Aaron for showing me your amazing Rava tattoo. That's a Quora reference, guys. I want to thank Carolina and Sophia and Deborah who came to our Beyond Belief show in Brooklyn, and I was running out and didn't get a chance to say hi to you properly. So thank you so much for coming. And then I just want to thank Megan and Joseph for your marvelous emails, Andrew for yours, and Elizabeth for your it was almost a novella of compliments. So thank you so much for that. I've become a horrible person to be around since then with a giant ego. And then, guys, I also have shows coming up this weekend at the All Jane Festival in Portland. I'm so excited to do this festival. And the wonderful ladies at All Jane have put together a wonderful improv show that I'm doing with Jessica Maginson and Annie Savage and Sarah Burns, all former guests of the podcast. And we're going to be doing a set on kind of a fun improvisational writing show. And then I'm also going to be doing the JV Club there live with some extraordinary guests. I'll tweet about it, but I've got a member of Sleater-Kinney. I've got an editor of Bitch. I've got a member of the Thermals, the band. It's going to be amazing. So I'm so excited to come up and do that. So if you're in that area and you want to come join us, please do. It's the All Jane Comedy Festival. That's a giant exhale for me. I hope you guys made it through this very long intro. And I hope you guys enjoy this episode. I'll go as far as to say I know you will. And I'll talk to you soon.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
A conversation that I feel I want to share with the world because
yes.
Tara just reminded me that over the weekend I was privileged enough to participate in a fundraiser for a charitable organization, and it was the contest itself was like teams pulling a jet airliner,
like an actual jet,
like an actual like plane
you could fly in it,
like
to
you can
some
fly
location.
In it. Yeah, and so there's like you can have up to 20 people. I'm sure all the teams had 20 people because
you were doing it one at a time. Teams weren't competing at the same time.
Exactly,
it
so
wasn't
one
like
plane. Oh my god, it would be so amazing.
Tug of war with
like
an airplane. That would be genius. But
I would have lost my mind. I almost did lose my mind.
Yeah,
anyway,
well,
it was very
you're pulling an airplane.
You're pulling an airplane. It's like a 737, I guess. You know, it's a sizable
airplane.
No,
do they have people on the plane? Like
the pilot is on the plane. I think he like puts his foot on the brake until you're actually allowed to pull because, you know, you set up and you're all holding this rope and then they give you the go. And I think probably people, we were discussing, because we think like people probably start pulling in advance because the thing that's the hardest thing is getting up that
sort
of that velocity. Almost said Velociraptor.
Well, Velociraptors are difficult on planes as well. That's a whole nother story.
Would have been very hard if I, with the sort of claws of I would have just snipped the rope by accident.
Yeah, straight through it.
Very lucky I don't have those claws. But yeah, we were the seventh team out of 10. And it seemed like all the teams had like
big, burly. Yeah. I think there's a lot of people who actually work for the airlines who are like out on the, you know, out actually probably pulling planes on a regular basis.
Oh, you know, as you do.
You know, as you do.
Yeah.
That's how they get anywhere. You've never noticed?
Yeah, that's how usually I fly across country.
They when they say we're being towed in to LA,
by human labor. Yeah.
And so we were like, I mean, we were just like a bunch of sort of all the guys. It was this, it's like the hipster group where all the guys and the girls are all the same shape and size.
Yes. And wearing the same jeans.
And wearing the same jeans. Right. Exactly. Uh-huh. So we were like, I mean, we're not gonna, you know, it's fine. And then we did it, and lo and behold, we were the fastest. Like, we got
seriously,
it fastest.
You guys won?
You pull the fastest, furthest. Well, let me, here's the thing.
Okay.
So we were like, so they're like, that's it. The team, you know, BrianSummers.com, our team
you guys,
leader.
Yes.
Is in first, and we went from like, especially me, to be honest with you, went from like, oh, I like, oh, this is cool, to like,
exactly.
We are amazing.
We have to win.
Like, couldn't stop. Like, we're floating on a cloud. And then as we're in the middle of talking about how amazing we are, the team after us totally breaks our record.
Right, right.
And then the team after them breaks theirs.
Interesting that it got progressively better.
I think it's like once you have a time to match, somehow like some juicy part of your brain
kicks
just
in.
Like kicks in fast.
And I wonder if can you see the other teams? What are you watching them? So you're sort of observing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, if we wait to use our energy.
Mm-hmm. So yeah,
so going first is not
but
best.
But we were third.
That's amazing.
And for sure, if you like showed a picture of the first place group and our group,
right,
you would be like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So it was very fun.
Congratulations.
I recommend it if you ever have a chance to pull a plane. It was
well,
that
the next
thing
time
once
someone
you,
asks
once
me, I will say yes.
I mean, I'm sure you've been asked many times.
I do. I mean, I usually like, turn those down because, I mean,
I understand.
You know, all this time spent pulling planes.
Oh, God. I really could have done it. Once you get two tries, and once you feel the feeling of what it feels like to pull, because we all pulled with all our might.
Yeah.
I mean, I almost like, I could have gotten a hernia.
Yeah.
I was pulling so hard, and to actually feel it
go,
it was extremely exhilarating.
That's really cool, actually.
Oh my gosh. Have you ever done anything like that? And by anything like that, I don't know what I mean. Like,
well,
ziplining? I'm not sure. I mean, I'm just like branching way
I sort of think I know what you're talking about, because at the Science Museum here in town, they have a thing that you can pull down, and I forget what you're pulling, but you're like lifting the weight of a car, because it's showing how you know, using pulleys work, and how you can have a fulcrum
torque.
Point to
knowing
torque.
No, I don't know that that's what it is, but is that a thing?
It is a thing, yes. Okay. Torque is a thing. But like how a fulcrum point can like then give you better balance if you're pulling against it, all that sort of stuff. But at the Science Museum, so you can actually lift a car.
Yes.
So it's not the same thing as pulling an airplane. But it's exciting
to
feel like
that
you
principle.
Personally are making an effect on something that normally you feel is so large and outside of the realm of my little size versus the size of that. It's really exciting.
Also reminds me, do you know how to like change a tire, like put a car up on a jack? That's what it reminds me
of. I understand theoretically the idea behind changing a tire, and I've actually helped my dad change a tire. But
it's more than I can
I am not strong enough to actually get the what are they, nuts? The wing nut bolt things, whatever those technical terms are, to get those off.
Right.
Even when I jump up and down on the, like it just, I can't. So no.
What would have happened to us in the era when we still would have really needed to know how to do that?
Yeah, I don't really
and
know.
And possibly still need to know how
to
do that.
We do need to know how to do that.
Yeah.
But I have AAA.
I know, me too.
I don't know.
I've kind of been going through this, like a frustrated at myself phase of why don't I know how to do more
certain
like
things.
Survivalist classes, the idea of not that I think the world's going to end tomorrow, but
no, but it's nice to feel like you're not reliant on someone else to take care of you in a circumstance where you want to feel like you understand how to do it and it's not outside of the realm of possibility.
Yeah.
Like you don't want to have to wait around for someone else to take care of it.
Yeah,
you
totally.
Want to be able to do the thing yourself.
And there's something really to be said for that point of pride. Not, I mean, not that that's, you know, pulling an airplane is an extreme example, but there
like,
is a
not a damsel
like,
in distress. Like,
yeah,
I can take care of myself.
Like I started my own fire.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know when I need that, but you
but
don't
it's nice
know
to
when
know
you
that
won't
you can
will need it
exactly. And you should have a survival kit just
and
in
I
case.
Should have a survival kit. Now, were you like a Girl Scout or a anything like that?
I tried to do that. I moved around a lot as a kid, so I was in 14 different schools. I was in
14?
Homeschooling.
Yeah. What? Where was your military? Or
I am the military brat without the military, so I'm just a brat.
Interesting.
We moved around a lot because my dad had a midlife crisis. I'm an only.
Oh,
and
me too.
So, and so my mom and I just followed my dad as he did pre-med school residency and became a doctor as his second career.
Well, I guess there could be worse midlife crises than that.
Exactly. You know, some people buy sports cars. My dad's like, I'm going to med school.
Save lives.
So yeah.
What was he doing before?
He was an aerospace engineer.
Okay. So he's a smart dude.
He's a smart dude.
And your mom, did she work or did she?
Yeah, she did. So she supported our family while my dad was in school because you have to eat. And my mom is a technical writer.
Okay.
So she did lots of corporate writing for companies and things like that. You know, all the brochures that you read when you go to the bank and medical companies.
And sometimes I just go for those brochures.
That's why I go to most companies, actually. But yes, they're good. They're really good. Most
of those
are my mom's
work. Would you lose your mind if I didn't know any of this and I really did have like a photo album
with flip through laminated? I would sort of freak out.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't actually know if they were my mom's. I mean, I know that my mom did a lot of stuff, but I don't
know. You don't recognize her technical style?
I don't necessarily recognize. Although she's very good at translating whatever it is you may need to talk about in whatever mumbo jumbo technology language into something that just everybody can understand.
That's a real skill.
It totally is.
In today's world.
I know. But so yeah, so we moved around a lot.
Give me some highlights.
Okay.
And lowlights if you'd like.
All of them. Virginia. Born in Virginia. Okay. Then we moved to Arizona.
Where in Arizona? Several different places.
Phoenix, Tucson.
I'm from Tucson.
Really? Yes. I like Tucson a lot.
How long were you there?
A year and a half.
God, I feel like they would just all blend together.
Yeah, they kind of do blend. Yeah. But I made, that was Phoenix. I was going to say I made my first snowman in Phoenix, but he was like this big because we got the huge snow that one year.
Sure, yeah.
And I collected all the snow on my dad's car and I made a snowman. he's two inches tall.
Half the size of a Coke can.
Yeah, it's super cute.
Yeah, we had snow when I was really little. It might have been the same Christmas or whatever, winter. And we were able to make a sizable snowman. And by that, I mean like maybe the size of a footstool.
That's still pretty impressive.
But it was so
for Arizona.
Dirty. It was dry grass, dirty.
Oh yeah, there were
sand.
Things in this snowman. Yes. It was not a healthy snowman. Yes. I remember the first time I actually saw snow and it was clean and fresh and white. And I was like, what magic is this? This is not what snow is.
So
snow
different.
Is this icy, hard, dirty, gross stuff that I played with.
It can be many things. Okay, so Virginia,
Arizona, Oklahoma.
Okay.
A couple places there, Oklahoma City, Tulsa.
And this is because of residency? Where was the actual medical school?
He was going to OU.
Okay. Oklahoma University.
And then we moved back to a different part of Virginia.
Okay.
Where I did some homeschooling and then I did part of high school, and then we moved to Michigan, which is where my parents still live, and I finished high school in Michigan.
Okay.
So it was just like boop, 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 boop.
Okay. God, yeah, Arizona was really the so that was pretty far out west considering the rest of the places that you were.
Everything else was a little more Midwest and Bible Belt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the way you said that, I have to assume that you identify most with that area.
It was also age-wise. So I was youngest in Virginia. Then it was Arizona. I was getting, 5, 6, 7, then Oklahoma, 10, 11, 12, back to Virginia, 12, 13, 14, Michigan, 14, 15, 16, and then I left for college.
And Michigan has, where in Michigan?
In Chelsea, which is where my parents still are. So it's right outside of Ann Arbor.
Okay. I don't know. I'm acting like I know anything about Michigan.
I was going to show you the hand.
If you're in Michigan, there's a hand.
If there's not, it doesn't matter. There's
a hand.
There's two hands.
Oh, that's mittens.
Mittens.
Two hands.
Because
a pair of mittens.
Yeah, it's a pair of mittens. Oh, I know.
How sad for those of us who come from a state that doesn't look like a
thing. You can't draw it.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, mine's kind of a
square. Yeah, it's like a rectangle.
Yeah, it's a rectangle with a couple of jagged edges.
Totally.
When you were kind of traveling, did you sort of have the, like, oh, this actually feels like, or did you sort of early on go, well, not going to get attached to this?
Yeah, I was very much not going to get attached to this. The one thing that I did like the most about moving around so much, because I was in and out of schools, and I skipped a grade, and it wasn't very easy for me to make friends because I was always the new kid. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that I liked was that every year I could reinvent who I wanted to be. And there was no history.
Sure.
So some years.
How many of us don't have that?
Yeah. Because you're growing up in. But of course, that was my like envious like dream of like, oh my God, to go to the same school and remember in second grade when you had the milk come out your nose. Like that was always like my vision of what perfection would be because it's what I didn't know.
Of course.
But it was great.
But did you want siblings?
I did.
Okay.
I asked for a little brother, a little sister, or a baby. Okay. I was like really open ended. I'm like, just you give me whatever, I will take it. But that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I liked the reinventing. I mean, in a way, that's like training for me to become an actor. Was
sure.
Like every year, I could just be like, oh, now I'm the straight A student. Now I'm gonna be like, whatever, I don't care. But of course, yeah. That didn't really fit me because I'm so type A that I was like, no, I guess I'm really the straight A student. But it's fine. I can try to pretend.
Yeah,
yeah.
I know if you don't have like the core. It is one of those things where I think it's almost true. Kind of reminds, I don't know if this is embarrassing that this is what made me think of was the sort of conversation that, what, you'd think that this is on the tip of my tongue all the time. It's not.
Oh, okay.
I was thinking about just then when Harry met Sally, when she's talking about like how great it was that she and her boyfriend didn't want kids because they could fly off to Spain at a moment's notice.
Or have sex on the table or whatever. Yeah.
We didn't do those things.
Right.
And so that's what it reminded me of, is this idea of like, we have to be careful in all of our lives mm-hmm. about what we know is possible because of what our circumstances are,
right.
but whether or not that actually like feeds us
yeah.
and whether we do that and we benefit from those things, mm-hmm. it's entirely different because people will do that to us now. They'll present
yeah.
this sort of,
absolutely.
Oh my God, you have this, this, and this. And you're like, yeah.
Well, because they have a vision in their head mm-hmm. of what the personification of the information that they know about you.
Yes.
But they can't possibly know everything about you.
Yeah.
And they're also grass always greener on the other side of the fencing, the situation, because they're looking at only pieces of it
mm-hmm.
and going, oh, if I had that, then everything in my life would be greater.
Exactly. Which is what we all do.
Yeah, of course.
Because
that's
to others
how
too.
Else can we do it? We can only yeah. look in people's boxes and go, you have a whimmy jammy? I want a whimmy
yeah,
jammy. Like,
exactly.
Of course. Like, that's just how
exactly.
it works.
Exactly. Well, so. It feels like, too, the other thing that popped into my mind was there a time, now, because you had all of this change mm-hmm. and shifting in your life, was there a time at which you thought, when I'm an adult, I will have a lot of structure?
Because oh, yeah.
now you don't, I mean, you sort of have that,
I know.
But you don't
I'm
really
an actor,
have that,
right? What, kind of structure did I
yeah,
give myself?
Yeah, it's interesting.
I
wonder if that's that thing where you sort of started a place and then circle back, or if you kind of always knew that you were okay with, you know, lack of
yeah,
consistency on a certain level.
That's really interesting, because I'm always in my life searching for stability and safety. Like, I'm always searching for that. And I never feel like I have it, but it's like it's my dragon.
Mm-hmm.
My dragon is safety.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, I don't know that it's necessarily that I feel like I chose this life because I thought that I was going to create this world for myself as an adult that was nice and safe and secure. But when I was a kid thinking about it, I decided when I was 9 that I was going to be an actor. Before that, I wanted to be a neurosurgeon. And,
sure.
you know, slightly different, just slightly
different. Sure.
But actually watching my dad go to med school was what partly made me go, oh, no, I just want to play a doctor.
Absolutely.
I don't want to be a doctor. But I did. I mean, I would go to the dissection of the cadaver with my dad
you
when I was
did.
A kid.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've never even seen a dead person.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I almost said I've never seen a dead person living or dead.
Well, you haven't seen them living or dead. Or dead. Dead. But yeah, so like I was really into science and that part of medicine didn't freak me out. Mm-hmm. And I thought that that's what I was going to do. But then as soon as I started to veer down the path of acting, I was like, oh, no, this is really what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I can play anyone and I can explore this world of imagination and excitement that really fuels that part of me. It's all about play
mm-hmm.
because I didn't always have play when I was a kid because I was always moving and things like that. So I was always looking for that. But then when I was a kid, I remember going, oh, but by the time I'm 21, when I'm an adult,
right.
I'm
fully formed.
I'm going to be living in New York or LA. I'm going to be super successful. I'm going to have an apartment. Like everything's going to be stable. Like I remember thinking that it was all going to be really clean and clear and safe and secure and stable.
Yeah.
As the like child brain looking at that.
Yeah.
And I actually remember when I turned 21 and I wasn't all those things. Yes, I happened to be living in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I was working as an actor, but my life was far from stable and I wasn't very successful and all of those things. I remember having like a panic attack because suddenly I was 21. I was that thing that I was supposed to be and I wasn't that thing that I wanted to be. And it was really devastating because I somehow had let myself down. And for a long time after that, I would say till like I hit my 30s, I was constantly living in a state of failure because I had failed myself for what I thought I was going to be by the time I was 21.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that infinite wisdom of child, like that's what adult is.
Yeah.
And so I am always looking for stability and security as my dragon. That's what I'm sort of always constantly chasing, but I've also created that. Mm-hmm. I'm married. We've been married almost 14 years. We own a home.
Yeah.
We're like, I have created that for myself because it's what I so desperately needed and wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I still live in a world in my industry, in my profession, what I've chosen to do that's so volatile and that's so up to other people and that's so not safe and stable.
Well, it's interesting because I think I can really relate to that dichotomy, and I've talked about it on the podcast before, is I think that there's something really kind of strange and great and scary about being a person who, I think a lot of us are like that. I think a lot of us really crave that security and yet we are also in a loop of coming to understand what is so wonderful about not having it and just kind of dancing that and finding, and, you know, like I have such a sense of humor, I think now with myself about like, you know, I used to, going to France and seeing like some businessman eating a McDonald's and being like, you're a fool.
Yeah. You're in France. Why aren't you eating a croissant and some cheese?
And having said that, I wouldn't eat at McDonald's in France, but what is my version of that? My version of that is like, you do start to kind of go, well, when I'm traveling, I want to try to get to this place, or I want to have this confirm. In my case, it's like, where's the natural food store? Like, how can I put something in my body that isn't like, just like Cheesecake Factory down the street kind of thing? And you start to sort of find where your brain wants to make those grooves of stability to kind of set some sort of balance to the rest of the stuff that isn't. And finding a long-term relationship that works for you that way is really great and really admirable, because that is one of those things that kind of can, for certain people, they just let that fall into the tumble of like, everything's crazy and changing and I can't keep this together. And so, but they might end up with, I don't know, like the home part of it.
Exactly.
Or everybody, on a show, I mean, that for some reason goes for 18 years.
It's that wheel, right? That wheel, our life wheel. So we've got career and relationships and health and like all those different pieces of the wheel.
Yeah.
And we all just focus on different sections of the wheel at different times. Yeah. And then the other parts of the section sort of fall out.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's just kind of how life works.
Yeah. What can you be focusing on at any given time and trying to make that balance? But it's funny that you would say, I never had that, like, by this age I should blank.
I wish I hadn't, because then it was like such a...
But I sort of wish I had set more specific goals at times. But at the same time, we both are like, well, we wouldn't change who we are now.
Yeah, so exactly.
It's fine. But to have that, and also, I think it's adorable that you were like, yes, I happen to be living in New York, and yes, I happen to be an actor. It's like, that's not a...
I know, but it's so funny because it didn't match the picture. Like, I wanted an Oscar, and I wanted to be famous, and I wanted to, like, matter somehow.
Like, there's only... in your mind as a child, there's only one... Well, we simplify everything, right? And I think that's why in the old days, not so much now, I guess I don't really know, but, you know... It was like, I want to be a rocket scientist, a firefighter, you know, ballet dancer.
Yeah, there were only 12 choices.
There were 12 choices.
Like, there was really only 12 choices. Yeah.
And then you had a very specific idea of what that choice meant and what that looked like. And I think it is that sort of the very beginnings of that little brain that's like wants to add order to the chaos or whatever.
But and for me, I didn't grow up with the television, so TV wasn't even on the table.
Oh, wow.
I didn't even recognize that that was a thing, like that acting in television was a thing. So for me, it was always film.
Interesting.
And so it was an Oscar, and it was a very specific, oh, being on a billboard. Like, those were the things, because that's what the people that were in the movies, because I went to the movie theater.
Right.
That's what that looked like.
Yeah.
And then suddenly I was like, wait, what's television? Wait, how does that work?
How did that, because that's another thing where obviously that distinguishes you from, not only you're the new kid, but like there's cultural references that you
that
probably
didn't go
don't
well.
Get. Was that a decision on your parents' part? Like, you wouldn't want to poison your mind with?
Yes and no. I think it was much less the worried about poisoning me, and much more my dad is slightly dyslexic. So my mom read to him every single one of his medical textbooks aloud.
Oh,
and
he
needed to be able to focus and study on.
So she kind of has that degree also.
Yeah, kind of. You can kind of call my mom and be like, so mom, I have a stomach ache. Oh yeah, it's not on the left, it's on the right. Are we cool? Yeah, we're cool.
She's, you know, like, let me put this into a technical but very accessible way.
Exactly. Yeah. And yet my dad will ask all these questions and like get, but he just, they think differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I never think my mom ever wanted to be a doctor. She was doing it because she loves my dad and she was helping him and it helped him study.
Are they still together?
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. But basically, so she read to him aloud, but he didn't want the television in the house. They got rid of it when he basically went back to med school when I was little, because he didn't want to be distracted.
Fair.
I mean, which is a fair thing.
Absolutely.
And at the time, I don't think either of them looked at it as, oh no, we're stunting our daughter in a social...
Which, by the way, life goes on. Yeah. I'm sure, you know, that did expand your imagination. And,
yeah. I mean, I read. I was a voracious reader. Anything I could get my hands on, I read.
Yeah.
And those were my friends, my books and the characters in the books. And they were able to travel with me, because then to go back to the question.
Speaking of the consistency, that's your McDonald's, right? You have this really healthy version that's like, let me check in with this thing, this story that I can tell myself again or be part of with myself again and feel safe.
And like when Yuri's not home, I don't go turn the TV on.
Yeah.
I don't go watch television. That's just not even part of, but it's not part of my wiring.
Yeah.
I don't think about it. I'll be like, I'm so lonely. I want someone to play with me. Like, but I never think to turn on the TV to watch something.
I know you, I mean, you have to know that that's very cool.
It's great. Yeah. And yes, it motivates me to do other things. Oh, I wrote a book. Oh, I did this.
Right.
I created this because I'm filling that time as opposed to filling it with just,
I mean, you're every
out.
Current parent who wants their kid to watch less television's dream. Like, you're the dream answer, which is, well, look at Tara Platt. She doesn't watch television, and she's able to do this, this, and this, and because of it, you know?
But at the same time, I remember how hard it was as a kid.
Yeah.
Not having friends and not fitting in. And I can't say that all of that was because I didn't have a TV and I didn't know who was Saved by the Bell or whatever that was.
I'm not sure anyone was, or maybe they all
were. I don't know how that works. But just because I didn't know that, I can't blame my popularity or lack thereof on that. It might have been because I was the new kid and it's easy to poke fingers at the new kid because they're new.
Yeah.
It might have been because I was from a different part of the country and I just didn't fit in. It might have been because I was an atheist living in the Bible Belt. It might have been, there were lots of things that separated me from anyone else. And there's lots of reasons kids don't like other kids.
Sure.
And so I know how hard it was for me, but I also know what I grew and learned from not having that. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, we only know our own experience. Yeah. So I can't base it or judge it on anyone else's or say that it's better or less than.
Of course. Of course. No, that's a great point. The other thing that I wanted to ask you about is, speaking of dichotomies, I think it's really interesting. I'm always really interested in people who have a very aesthetic, artistic sensibility, particularly when it comes to acting, and this ability to, and I guess I would say you're very rare because I don't know that many, but I feel like when I stumble across one or two, I'm fascinated because the reasons that I couldn't be a doctor feel to me directly related to why I am a performer, which is this like intense empathy that makes it so hard. And by the way, I feel you're a very empathetic person.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm curious about is I was so, so overly imaginative and so uneasy with things like someone else's pain or, you know what I mean? Like really physically feeling,
oh, believe me,
you know what I mean?
I drive past a car accident with my eyes. I don't want to see somebody.
I think maybe I'm projecting into the idea that you saw cadavers. Cause I even feel like I would have been like, I can't look.
But on some level, I think the scientist in me, because I think at the base of who I am, excellence in play is very high. Like everything I do in life has to be excellent in play, which is why I like high aesthetics because it's the costumes and the disguises and the props and all the fun stuff that makes this world because it's world building. That's
absolutely
excellent in play. That's the little kid playing rocket ship. Like that's excellence in play. But I think the scientist in me that's always asking questions, which is how you become excellent in play, is asking the questions, well, what are the rules of the game? Well, how do we play? Well, how do we... The scientist in me gets very excited about the technical and the details. I mean, if I'm having a bad day, I balance my checkbook. Like, that makes me feel better because it's technical.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the complete... It's the balance of those two sides of myself simultaneously.
Totally.
And so... Yeah, I didn't want to see a cadaver because I knew it was a dead body and I knew that that person was a person and that there were people that cared about it and maybe they were in pain. But I was also able to go, oh, this is a dead body now. This is not the person.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to scientifically look at what's inside and we're going to see how it works and we're going to figure it out from an understanding place because at the end of the day, I just want to ask questions and understand.
Mm-hmm.
I want to...
You don't want to be limited by that voice in us that sort of wants to shut that door.
Yeah, but that's what I do with a character. Well, why would that character make that choice? Well, why did that character think that that would be good for them? Well, how did they get... I mean, like, that's what acting is asking questions. At the end. Like, what you're doing with a script is the who, what, why, when, where, how... for the circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what science is in a way. I mean, I always thought... physics was the poetry of life because it explains how the world around us works.
Yeah.
And that was so exciting to me because it gave me a sense of security and a sense of understanding. And yet you can always push it. You can always get more. There's always, you're never going to know everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really exciting to me.
Absolutely.
So.
Well, the science part, And by the way, I'm not just saying like any everything that we have is from our parents and our genes. So screw it. But it feels like I can draw a pretty straight line to this sort of sense of wonder in science from your parents.
Sure.
And you mentioned that you were an atheist, so it sounds like they were pretty direct with you about their belief system in that way. I have so many things I want to ask you.
Ask
number
them.
One.
I will tell
I
know you.
I have
answers.
To like throw a few of them out there because I'll forget. One of them was. How did they talk about that with you? And did you, when you were in the Bible Belt, like, were those really things that were kind of coming up, you were butting up against on a regular basis? And how did that work? And then the other one is what I started out asking or began to ask, which is, do you feel that your love of performance also somehow can be traced derivatively to any, either of your parents or part of your family?
Yes.
And third is, how did they respond? Were they as supportive with whatever choices you were interested
These are all great questions. Okay, we'll try to go back.
I'm going to set my mic down. I'm going to go have a sandwich.
Yes, I'll see you in a couple hours. I'm just going to chat. So to answer your first question, they were always very direct with me. Anytime I asked a question from the time I could speak, which was pretty young, they would answer to the best of their knowledge and their best of their world. I remember getting in trouble in preschool because my parents had already told me how sex works and the anatomy of a boy and the anatomy of a girl and how that all gets together and how a baby's made. And I went to school, 2-year-old self that I was, because I was in Montessori school at 2.
Nice.
And I went to Montessori school and I was like, you have a penis because you're a boy. I'm like, I got in trouble by the teacher.
Right.
But my parents always thought that if a child asks something, you have to be honest with them and tell them. Because then you're teaching them the information they need. You're not creating any stigma around it. You're not creating any issue one way or the other about it. Whereas if you go, well, you can't know about that till you're older, then the kid's like, well, what the hell is that? I want to know about that. Why can't I know? Like, it becomes... In a way, it's what we've done in our society with being politically correct. You know, like everything becomes so stressful because it becomes this issue rather than diffusing it and just giving the information and discussing it and putting it out in the open, which takes away all of that. And then it's just fact-based information and you can agree or disagree belief-wise, but this is a table and it's made out of wood and, you know, like you just get the details. So my parents were always very clear with me to the best of their ability based on what they knew and understood of the world. When I asked a question, I would get an answer regardless of the topic. And that went to religion, that went to sex, that went to politics, that went to whatever my little child brain would ask or consider. And then because of that, they told me their beliefs. They don't believe in anything else. They don't believe in life after death. This is our reality. Once our reality is done, we are done, and that is our existence. Growing up in the Bible Belt, that was not very fun because it was also hard for me because I was taught what I believe to be right and wrong as a choice as a human. Like, what do you choose because you're a
not
human?
Not because someone tells you.
Not because somebody tells you to do this morally or not morally. Not that we don't have morals. Like, I mean, I have morals. I'm not going to just go around willy-nilly killing people.
Yeah.
But I think my parents also tried to, I never had Santa Claus. Like I never.
Oh, you didn't?
Okay. Because my mom's like, well, that's just a made up thing. And I'm not going to tell my daughter a lie and then have her find out later that that's not a real thing. Sometimes I played Santa Claus and I would put cookies out, but I knew we were playing a game. And that also didn't go well when I would tell the kids at school, oh, there's no such thing as Santa Claus. And they hadn't quite gotten to that place yet.
Right.
But Bible Belt wise, that was really hard because I would see these kids do things that I knew to be what I understood to be wrong, cheat, lie, steal, be cruel, do things that I didn't think were acceptable or appropriate as children. And yet because they were religious and because they went to church on Sunday, suddenly none of that mattered and it got wiped clean as the slate. And it felt inherently unfair and wrong somehow because I was taught you have to look yourself in the mirror in the morning and you have to know you're the only one that lives with you the whole your whole life. You're the only one that's going to know what you've done.
Yeah.
And you have to be okay with that. And if you're okay making that decision, it's an okay decision for you. And yet I would see these kids do these things that I believe to be wrong that I could tell that they thought were wrong or they knew were wrong. They would steal things. I never stole anything ever because I knew it was wrong. There was one time I was with my mom in a store and I was little. I must have been 3. And there was a pack of gum and she was checking out. I saw the pack of gum and I took it and we got out to the parking lot and my mom saw that I had the pack of gum and she had me come back into the store and we had to pay for it because I wasn't allowed to leave with the pack of gum because I had taken it. I hadn't intentionally stolen it, but I learned you don't do that.
Right.
And I also, as a kid, felt very strongly that even a corporation shouldn't be taken advantage of. And then when I, you know, like as I got older, I would see all my friends being like, oh, well, it doesn't matter because it's a corporation. And I was like, no, corporations are built on people who have jobs. And if you do that, then you're stealing their, but because I had been taught the way that I'd been taught, I saw it as an ecosystem. And if you steal from them, they raise the prices for everyone. So then you're paying more for the thing that you go in and you buy the next time. And so when all my friends in college were like, haha, we screwed whatever big company and we took the, I would get so angry. But at the same time, like, I'm not the police of the world. If that's what they thought that they needed to do, I disagree. But I also wasn't impacting anyone with right. that.
Well, that's what, I mean, I think, and these guys know, I certainly went through so many of those sure. like, typical, like,
and that's a typical
and
thing.
And I think it is. It is a very sort of like, it's a special young person who can see past the phases that people are going through.
But it was also part what of it I was taught.
Why am I angry for no reason?
Yeah.
Why do I want revenge on this corporation that has nothing to do right. with my life, right. but I'm still going to steal this thing? And by the way, I don't even need this thing.
Exactly.
You know? It's all very, it is a very kind of morally confusing time of for course. Young people. And I think a lot of that has to do with the relationships that they've built culturally, socially with their parents or yeah. with authority figures. And if you felt like you kind of had a more direct line mm-hmm. to all of that logic from a very young age,
yeah,
that didn't feel necessary for you to kind of have those. You
yeah.
know.
And yet at some point I wonder, like, I never rebelled. I never went through a rebellion against my parents, against And there's a part of me that's like, I should rebel, but I don't have anything or anyone to rebel against. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I feel like there is something to be said for rebellion as a growth. Like, you look at human development and you look at the stages of a little kid and when they're two versus when they're five and when they're, you know, like, you watch human development and you go, oh, that's, they're going through the terrible twos. Okay, now they're going through their self, mm-hmm. you know, identification. And now they're, like, you can actually watch it. And I feel like rebellion is part of separation and no longer being entrained, you know, mm-hmm. like it's unwinding that sort of enmeshment mm-hmm. When you look at it from a psychological sort of perspective. And I think that things like that are really important. And yet because of the platform that I grew up in and the way that things were, it never felt like I could rebel because I'd be rebelling against logic. Mm. And that didn't seem like I could, I'm rebelling against the world because it's the world like that didn't. Uh-huh. So I couldn't pursue that.
Yeah.
And yet I think that it's a really integral part of growing up. So I think as I've become an adult, it may have taken me longer to sort of self-actualize mm-hmm. because I didn't have the sharp sort of I'm no longer a teenager, rah, you know, yeah. thing happening for me.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's a really interesting thing to be able to look back on retrospectively and go, oh, because my parents gave me all these great things and taught me certain ways to be, it allowed me a certain path. And yet it also deprived me of, you know, cutting my hair off and dyeing it black and being angry or whatever.
I mean, those were fun times.
You know, but I mean, like, but so I never had that.
Right.
Because I just didn't, because it didn't make any sense logically. Like, I was kind of Vulcan. Do you know
you
what I mean?
Like, I
was
Vulcan. Like, I think that's right. what probably many of my listeners are thinking.
Yeah, they're
I have
like,
an almost
Vulcan.
All Vulcan audience.
Oh, well, that's, you might like me then. That's
yeah,
good.
No, I have a
that's
special good. Vulcan satellite okay. that beams to Vulcan.
Yeah, if I were better at my sci-fi, I would know what the planet was.
But Vulcan.
Something.
Well, here's a question, and I don't, mm-hmm. I hope this isn't like, I don't want to seem like I'm like suddenly like prying in, in some sort of like, well, I'm going to get something out
that's
of you.
Okay.
It's no, absolutely not that.
There's really nothing that's
I'm very
off-limits.
Envious of because here's why I'm going with this is that to me, a lot of what we're talking about and a lot of those behaviors are very fear-based mm-hmm. and you don't sound like you were fearful. You
oh
know
my
what
God,
I'm saying?
I'm the most fearful person
okay,
in
so
the world.
Okay, so that's my question is sort of where, because I think that a lot of the, it feels like a lot of the things that we do as teenagers or as college students that feel like they are freeing are directly in response to a new understanding of our mortality or this idea of, yeah. of teenagers thinking they're immortal.
Right.
And invulnerable. I think the truth of that, not to be all Freudy, is probably that's when we first start understanding it and that we're testing those boundaries. But a lot of it is fear-based. And I think a lot of the things I did had to do with feeling overwhelmed by life and afraid and angry.
Oh, I feel all those things all the time. Yeah. Oh my God.
But I guess that's sort of what I was wondering is how did that manifest?
Yeah, I mean, I think
it's
just
a dumb question. Of course, you're allowed to be afraid.
I think the way it manifested was me actually having fears. Yeah. When I was 14, I got an like overnight fear of flying, like immobilization, could not go near airplanes, could not go to the airport. I had already bought myself with my own money that I had earned a ticket to go visit my cousins for the summer.
Right.
And I could not do it.
And you must have been fighting your own logic, right? Because you know
that this can't be about anything. Yeah, and my dad pilots planes.
Yeah.
Like, what is wrong with me? I understand aerodynamics. I know that the plane's not going to fall out of the sky. Yeah. And yet, it's an irrational fear.
Did you feel fearful of... I say this as somebody who's gone through... who had panic and anxiety in my late teens, early 20s.
Because intelligence? Yes,
because
go on.
Because I was too smart for
because
my own good.
Intelligence.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you for that. But yeah, I think what I became uncomfortable about flying had nothing to do. I had no fear that the plane was going to crash. Mm-hmm. That wasn't it. It was absolute lack of control, claustrophobia feeling. And yes. And whether I could identify that or not then,
yes.
I never worried that the plane was going to crash. It was more,
I worried about
what
everything.
If I freak out and
on
I'm
the plane.
Trapped in this plane?
Oh,
how awful will that be? So it becomes though nothing
that's
to fear
part
but fear
of it,
itself.
Or that was part. And now I'm fine. Hypnotherapy is amazing. I highly recommend it to everyone. I became a certified hypnotherapist because I was like,
oh,
how the hell does
cool.
this work? I'm going to understand.
I've always
it.
Thought about it, but I've never
it's
done
great.
It. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure I have a million bad habits that I could
it's
probably
amazing.
Use.
It's amazing. Yeah. I highly recommend it to anyone. Hypnotherapy, go for it. But for me, I think it was my realization of how tiny I am and how big the world is and all of the various things. I mean, a meteor could crash through the ceiling right now. I could drive and get hit in a car accident. Someone could be carrying a gun at the mall. You know, like any of those things could be a possibility. And that's too big for any of our brains to really be able to wrap around and still be able to function. Because what happens is fight or flight kicks in. Our reptile brain goes, aha, I know what to do. And we either freeze and we don't do anything and we become agoraphobic and we live in our houses and we don't go out. Or we want to run around all the time and be like, get me away from this terrible situation because there's something that's going to hurt me.
Right.
And you can't really function as a human in that state all the time.
Yeah.
And I think actually, I've been talking to a good friend of mine who's very familiar with your body and your cortisol levels and how when you're constantly in adrenaline and when you're stressed all the time, I do this because I feel like the stress level
Tara's
rises.
It's lifting,
like, it's lifting
her,
all the way.
Yeah, up to, basically up to your chin.
Yeah, you're drowning in adrenaline.
Full. Yeah.
When that happens to you for such prolonged periods of time, your body doesn't function as well. And I lived in a stress-filled state much of my childhood, partly because I didn't fit into with the kids that I was around. And so not having a peer group is a stressful thing. And partly because I was so aware, because I was an intelligent little kid and I was like, oh, wait, if this, then this. And that means danger is also a possibility. Mm-hmm. And having those levels constant creates a stress over a long period of time. And so I think that what my body did was, because you can't be afraid of everything all the time and still function, it had to find something.
Yes,
and
that makes perfect sense.
And
isn't
create
that darling?
I know, I mean, it's so sweet. It's,
you know,
so
what I
sweet.
Mean? It's
my
so
little
frustrating,
brain trying to take care
like,
of me.
I see.
Yeah,
you basically had like a full balloon and so you just like put a hole in it and everything had to come out that hole.
And release. Mm. So for a long time, 6 or 7 years, didn't go near planes, didn't talk about planes, would hyperventilate and not want to wouldn't watch movies if they took place on a plane. Mm-hmm. Like, it was hardcore until finally I was like, this isn't helping me. This isn't going to further my life. This isn't going to allow me to do the travel that I want to do and help with my career and all those things. And I worked to eliminate that so that that wasn't inhibiting me any longer. But I do think, I mean, yeah, I'm filled with fear all the time because I'm an intelligent human and I'm aware that life is not safe. I'm jealous of people like my husband who just goes around with a pretty hunky-dory attitude and is like, yeah, bad things can happen, but they're not going to.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, but they might. You know, I don't want to believe that I'm a pessimist necessarily, but for whatever reason, there's a part of me that's always like, but the other shoe may drop and you have to watch out for that other driver because we don't know that he's going to see you and he might be on his phone and his brakes might not work.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm always aware of all the threats.
And it's hard because it doesn't sound like you had, unless we're skipping something, it doesn't sound like you had, you know, there are certain people who have those paranoias, for lack of a better word, because they have had something in there. Like, it really was, my brother was killed in a motorcycle accident or my mother died of cancer when I was 10. And I feel similarly, which is I feel like in a weird way, I mean, I definitely had a lot of, you know, whatever, being a highly sensitive kid, whatever.
Sure.
But from a, when you really break it down and sort of look at like the big traumas that can happen, like two things I just named.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough not to have
specifically
those.
Right.
But I think if you're a smart kid and you're starting to come to understand all of that, then it's even almost worse because you're like, when is it due for me?
Because it feels like a probability.
How am I getting away with this?
Yeah.
What is it going to be for me and when?
Yeah.
And then you're even worse off than...
Yeah. And I know it's magical
thinking. I shouldn't say even worse off. There's nothing worse than that, but...
But it is. It's the anticipatory anxiety of a bad event is worse than the actual event that would be bad.
Yeah.
And so when you do magically think that, oh, if it hasn't thus far, that means it's coming any second... You're creating that stress and that level of anxiety that is inhibiting every moment in the future. Whereas if you go, it hasn't happened thus far, so it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
What a much more like, better place to be thinking
or
from.
Or even just like, I don't know what's going to happen,
right.
But
I'm
going
not gonna
to
focus
enjoy
on
this
it.
Moment of it not happening, obviously.
So I work very hard to do that now.
It but, is work.
But
it is work. And for some reason, and for some people, you're right, it is less work. But so let's, okay, so I'm going to... I could talk to you for 8 hours, by the way. But so in high school, how many years did you have in Michigan where you actually kind of were like, I'm finished?
2 years in high school. So I did junior and senior year in Michigan.
Okay. Mm-hmm. By the time you got there, did you have a, I mean, it sounds like you had a pretty strong sense of who you were by that time.
Yeah.
When you came into that environment, who were the friends that you ended up making? Was it theater?
It was theater. Yeah, it was theater people. It's funny because... Going back to something you said earlier, like I always sort of thought this is the end when I move and I don't know these people and like, bye, have a nice life. Mm. I never was one of those people. It's like, let's be pen pals and we'll write. Like I was like, okay, bye, have a nice life. It was good knowing you.
Uh-huh.
So I kind of did that also when I left high school. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, okay, bye. It was nice to see you guys. I'm going to go do my next. And it's been hard for me in the last few years to actually be able to have long form friendships, which I've been working on, which is like, oh.
Well, you're also in a business where you're repeating that over and over,
over
again,
and over
which
again.
Which is the best and worst thing about this.
Exactly.
Is that you know, I feel like I could totally hang out with you and Yuri all the time.
And yet we see each other.
I don't know because you'll be working and I'll be working and we'll be out of town and this
right.
and that. So it is. It's this teasy
It's a weird repetition
like,
of that.
Just know you're out there and I love you.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know when I'm going to see you next.
Exactly.
But you have to have... But in that way, you were very prepared to have that sort of practical... Because I do think there are other people who come into this business who are hurt when they fall in love with someone.
Oh,
and
totally.
I mean that in a platonic way.
Yeah,
but
they
fall in love with someone and then that person isn't available to them every day.
Absolutely.
I think that can be very painful.
And that's hard for me because I sort of leave in that situation like, oh, it was so great.
Yeah.
And then if we run into each other again in the future, I'm super excited about it. It wasn't like I've been avoiding you since then.
Yeah.
It's just our lives are doing our lives. And then it's sort of, oh, now let's get back together again.
Right.
But yeah, so I mean, I hung out with theater people. I mean, that's because that's what I was doing. That's kind of where I was.
The other thing that jumped in my mind, because I just brought up Yuri, is that did you have that feeling? Because especially in high school, I mean, it's we make jokes of it now, but the passion that people would feel about crushes or about this or that, this sort of this like, no, you guys, I really met the man I want to spend the rest of my life with,
or
I met the woman that's the woman of my dreams, and then it crashes and burns, and you're like, I don't know why I thought that. But
I was a late bloomer. Mm-hmm. I had skipped a grade. I graduated high school at 16.
Okay.
So... It was already scary enough to be around boys and like actually go out on a date with them because they might want to touch me.
Uh-huh.
So that was already like a little like, sort of thing. I did have two boyfriends in high school, but it was very like, let's hold hands. Okay.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're very sweet guys, but it was definitely, I was very young emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, not in a like, and we're going to get married. I mean, like I liked my boyfriend when I liked the first one too, but I liked my second boyfriend when I was graduating and he was actually a year younger than me in school, but that meant he was the same age that I was, you know?
I was a year ahead. I graduated at 17.
Oh, yeah.
So I know the feeling of like not too, I mean, it's hard to imagine 2 years. It was hard enough being a year younger.
But you're
and
really
I always
young.
Was like, at least I'm tall.
Yeah. No, but I mean like I'm sort of 5'6", but I wasn't like certainly tall. And I was a young... Like I wasn't naive necessarily, but I just, like, I didn't understand sarcasm and I didn't, like, I was just young.
What's so interesting, I'm so fascinated by, there are so many of us, especially in the kind of like nerd con, that the community of people who have those passions, so many of them, whose stories I love have to do with this intellectual maturity that isn't matched by either a physical maturity or maybe it was matched physically and intellectually, but not emotionally. It's interesting when you are so good. 'Cause I know innately about you and everything that you said that you were great around adults.
Yeah.
So it's so interesting that you.
Oh, I was
you
much so more comfortable you know around adults.
It's like you're very comfortable around adults.
Yeah.
And in that regard, someone else might look on you and go like, "Oh, she's so mature for her age," which I'm sure many people said.
Yeah.
And then for you to have the understanding that like while that may have been true, there was this whole other thing going on that you felt like you were behind.
Totally.
You know.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. No, I was much more comfortable around adults. In fact, the very first play I did, I was 9. I was the only kid in the cast. It was Wait Until Dark. So it was a bunch of adults and me as a little kid.
Perfect.
And that was the perfect dichotomy for me because I was like, oh, I can hang out with you guys and I can just talk to you guys and you're excited about me and I can totally have any conversation you're having because that's how my parents always talk to me.
We're peers.
Mm-hmm. I only had a babysitter 3 times, I think, in my life. My parents took me with them everywhere.
That's great.
If they went out to dinner with friends, I went out to dinner with friends. Not with my own friends, with their friends.
And yet you probably weren't there with like, and then their friends had brought their child.
No,
like,
it would always be me as the child, but in adult conversation. So if we were talking politics, I was talking politics.
Yep.
Like that was the conversation. And so it was much safer. And yet I think part of that might be the people that became more comfortable with their bodies and their sexuality and their physicality.
Living inside those bodies more.
We're living in those bodies more and may have gone into sports more or may have gone into other physical realms where those of us, and I'm just postulating because I don't actually have any statistics on this, but maybe those of us that were a little more intellectual were doing more intellectual pursuits, whether it was theater, writing, reading, music, things like that. And maybe that is part of why we look at it as this culture versus other cultures, because I certainly didn't go the path of football or things like that. And I know people that did. And I'm always like, really? Why was that interesting to you? You know, because I get that we all have things that we become passionate about. We all fan out over something.
Yeah.
But it's interesting as to what it is that drives people or excites people. Whereas I don't, going back to empathy, like I don't really want to watch sports because it looks like they're all going to get hurt. Like, okay, can't we just play chess? Like, you know, like nobody's going to get injured in chess.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, like I don't necessarily like watching pain. I don't necessarily like watching people get hurt or like, I don't like, if you try to draw somebody's blood on screen, I will close my eyes because I do not like that because I do not like needles.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the science side of it and that always supersedes of my curiosity. But why does it do that? Well, how do you do that? How do you figure it out?
So. It's really that's a really good indicator of those conversations that we have in our own brains. And that my hope is that and what I've been feeling lately because I've sort of been doing things that I've been trying to do more things that like initially I probably would have just said, I'm uncomfortable with the idea of that. I don't know what that'll be like.
Yeah.
And to kind of continue pushing those boundaries within reason, but like having the benefit of being older and having lived with yourself long enough. And I'm sure this is an only child thing too.
Probably.
Because we're very good at talking to ourselves because no one else was around.
Oh yes. We have whole conversations with ourselves.
Yeah.
Me, and myself,
so
and I.
I feel like I very recently had that exact conversation with myself where I was like, I don't like this. I don't like this experience. And then the other voice in me was like, but don't you want to see what it's like on the other side? And don't you, and isn't it worth finding that out to not stop yourself?
Yeah.
And really reasoning, like really reasoning with yourself and getting to that other side and going like, oh my God, I did it.
Yeah.
I did find out what that, you know.
Yeah. And I may still not
operation
like it.
Looked like
yeah. It may still not make me happy. I may still choose not to do that again, but I've taken that step. And now that I've taken that step, I'm a little braver. I'm a little more confident. I'm a little whatever those things are because I took action. And you know what? I may like it.
Absolutely.
So yeah.
Oh my God. I can't. Okay. This is, I wish that I had even just like an extra half hour to keep this going because I just looked at the clock and I was like, well, it's almost been an hour.
Okay.
So I want to do this MASH game with you.
Okay. Yes.
But I feel like as much, sort of theoretical stuff as we were talking about, I do feel like I have some very good ideas in mind for your
what
for
is
your
MASH
categories. So MASH is a very social, very school-based game.
Oh boy.
Mansion, apartment, shack, and house is what
I
MASH stands for. You don't get to pick that.
Oh.
But what happens is by a process of elimination, essentially an eeny, meeny, miny, mo process. I'm going to give you categories in which you will name 3 things.
Okay.
And then in the end, I'll do this little thing and then I'll tell you like, oh, you got this. You got this.
All
you
right.
got this. This is your life.
Okay,
this is
that
your
sounds
imaginary
fun.
MASH life.
Okay.
So we already know that you'll either be at a mansion, apartment, a shack, or a house.
Okay.
The question is where, what vacation area, and I don't mean that in like, it has to be in Rio, but like if you could have a second home somewhere that you could just get to whenever you wanted. It's not like, oh, well, we have to pack up.
Okay, so like a house in Ireland.
There you go.
Ireland. I would want a flat.
I mean, I can't guarantee you're going to get a mansion, apartment, shack, or house.
Oh,
you may have a shack in Ireland. You may have a mansion in Ireland.
Oh, you mean the location. But we're talking about okay, not well, what it is. Okay, yes. I would like something in Tuscany.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like something in New York.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Wonderful, wonderful. Okay. Next one, going to get this right out of the way. My favorite. Three foods that you can have whenever you want at the snap of a finger, and they are not bad for you at all.
Oh, boy.
Just
okay.
Indulge, and you'll feel fine, yes. And you'll probably, they're good for you.
Okay, delightful. it would be browned but not charred marshmallows.
Oh.
They're my favorite. And Kraft macaroni and cheese, because it's such a guilty pleasure.
Go. Let's get it in
with
there.
Peas in it. Kraft macaroni and cheese with peas.
Nice
that's
twist.
So my favorite. And then something I could eat all of the time would be. I love food so much.
I do too.
Oh my God, I love all
hence
the food.
This category.
All of the food, all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
The Moroccan soup. I forget what it's called. Harira? Harissa?
Oh, like harissa? Yeah,
harissa,
yeah, yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Harira is the sauce. Harissa, yes, yes.
Ooh, that is... What a great choice. That's a new
it's so
choice.
Good. It's
and
so good.
A very, very good one. Okay, next one is... Now, listen. This is just part of this MASH game.
Okay.
All due respect to Yuri.
Oh, okay.
In your alternate universe, you have sexy times or hand-holding times.
Okay.
Or alternate
definitely hand-holding times because it's much safer. Yes. No.
Much safer. And it can also be, I'll extend it to say, it could be a person from fiction. It could be a character someone played in a movie that you loved. It doesn't have to be like Ryan Gosling.
Right.
It can be like Paul Newman's character in blah, blah, blah.
Oh, wow. This is deep.
Any
okay.
era, you okay. know, anything. So three dudes.
Three dudes. Well, I know Stephen Fry doesn't like the ladies, but I like Stephen Fry. So.
I think this is a perfect opportunity to enjoy him because
yeah. So Stephen
only
Fry,
in this world, beautiful.
Channing Tatum, because my husband and I both adore him.
Wonderful. You can bring him right into the marriage.
Yes.
Channing Tatum.
Who would my third man be? Oh my goodness, that's a tough one.
This is good. What I'm starting to get from you already is the first two are very easy, and then the third is
hard.
Like, this is the one that matters because
this
the
one
last
really
one
matters.
I
know. I think it would be Tesla.
Oh, great! I enjoyed Tesla as played by David Bowie in that.
Well, anything
movie.
As played by David Bowie. I guess I should have put David Bowie on there. Yes, that's true.
Wonderful. Okay, now this is a new category.
Okay.
I think. One of my listeners, Dave, suggested it. Dave, I'm pretty sure it was you. If it wasn't you,
we're giving you credit.
I'm going to give someone named Dave credit and
well done,
apologize
Dave.
To the listener that it was. I'm not looking at anything. That's just what my memory is telling me. I could be dead wrong.
Okay. We blame Dave on this one.
We blame Dave. Also, I have like 18 Daves. So
good. So they're all going to feel
happy.
You can
all take credit.
Yes.
This is what he suggested was if you could. This is really a challenge for you because it goes against everything you know to be right.
Oh, boy.
In this world, there's no negative ramifications to you having performed like the perfect heist.
Oh,
so it's like you now own Michelangelo's David.
Okay.
It's fine. It was just an amazing achievement. It's just like a thing that you were able to like film, you know, filmically kind
okay,
of
okay,
like
but I get to roll through
capture.
The things. I'm totally down being a cat burglar.
Exactly.
Okay.
Listen, if you want to give it back right afterwards, just like, you know,
I just need to
Thomas
acquire
Crown
it.
Does.
Right.
Yeah.
So we need to know what those things are.
Yes.
Okay. It would be all of Leonardo da Vinci's writings
perfect.
And drawings.
Perfect.
It would be Tesla's missing journals.
Yeah.
And it would be, because it doesn't have to be worth necessarily.
No, not at all. It's your heist.
It would be Mark Twain's writings.
Oh, that's great. That's great. God, the adrenaline of...
I get so nervous trying to answer these.
In your hands.
I know. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so nervous. I want to answer right. It's my own thing. Why do I have to
But I will be grading this.
Yes,
no.
Thank you. But I want a gold star at the end. But yeah.
You will definitely get a gold star. You already have a gold star.
Oh, boy.
This is like
oh, I'm so
gold
excited.
Star too. Next one is three books that are real worlds that you may dive into and hang out with the characters for as long or as little as you like.
Yeah. All of the books. I have to pick three.
I know.
Oh, my God. Okay.
And
I'm going to go fantasy.
Spoiler
because...
alert, I'm going to do the same with movies, too, for you, because
okay.
I know you liked the films.
Okay. Okay. With books first, because I want it to be fun fantasy worlds.
Mm-hmm.
It would have to be the habit.
Great.
And I've really been enjoying a book a friend gave me called Discovery of Witches, because I always wanted to be a witch when I grew up.
I did too.
Yeah. And that's a wonderful, it's a historian actually wrote the book. So you get this wonderful like Elizabethan history to it. So I
always
that.
Love that when they incorporate, you really feel like you're learning.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the third one. I keep thinking of Life of Pi. Not that I really want to be on a boat with a tiger, but there was something so vivid about that world. But I don't really want to be stuck on a boat with a tiger. Fair. So maybe I won't pick that one. let's see. You're right. The third one always stumps me. It's because I feel like so much is revolving on just that last one.
Because the first two and you always have your third wish just sitting out there. Because I can get it out there. It totally makes sense. I'll offer up Harry Potter.
Because magic
tends to work with the witches.
You're right. Harry Potter would be a good one.
I'm not saying that.
You're right. I've been counting down the days till I can go get butterbeer in Hollywood. So
exactly.
See, I mean, I know you can get it at the store. I mean, actually at Harry Potter.
In the land.
Yes, I'm waiting for that to happen.
All right. So I wasn't wrong. You weren't wrong. That. Next one is, let's say, three things that you can do that right now would make you frightened in one way or another.
You
can do them and they're totally safe.
Okay. Jumping out of an airplane.
Yeah.
Because I would never do that.
Me neither.
Going scuba diving.
Mm-hmm. That's probably on my list too. Although now I'm starting to feel like I could maybe.
Yeah, I'm debating that. Although I get really seasick. And the thought of having to go out on the boat is already devastating enough to do that.
I feel like there's probably like a place in Hawaii where you're so close to where you can scuba.
Actually, I heard you can actually walk into
the water. Well, that's why I like snorkeling in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And I've, by the way, only been snorkeling in Hawaii. Because it is that same feeling of why I don't want to be trapped somewhere.
Me too.
So I want to be like, and now I'm done snorkeling. And I decide I can touch land with my feet again.
Yeah. I guess the third one would be always feeling safe in elevators, because I do not right now.
Yep. Great. I don't really have a problem with elevators, but when I was in Hawaii, strangely,
I was like, the elevator in my hotel. In Hawaii.
Yes. That's what I'm getting at.
Right.
No, the elevator in the hotel that I was in, someone did get trapped in there.
Shit. That's my
so
great.
So I was like, oh, great.
I know. I get so worried. And every time I go to a con, I get worried about that. It's so stupid.
I know.
And my husband's like, you know you're going to be fine.
Elevator with a bunch of people wearing like big fluffy costumes.
And then screaming in there.
I really get it. I really get it. Okay, so next category is let's do three discoveries, and this kind of goes into, I'm basing this on things we've talked about and also the things that you're interested in terms of items, but what about like three discoveries or some sort of advent in science that it would be really cool to get to witness firsthand?
Fire.
Great.
I would have just loved to sit over Marie Curie's shoulder, though. That would have been cool, too.
Right?
Yeah.
I can add her.
Yeah, Marie Curie.
Okay, great.
And then I think it would have been amazing to see flight, I know that a lot of people did it at various times, and I know the Wright brothers get the most credit for that, although there's so many things like the Farnsworth invention, and there's just a lot of stuff that would be great to just watch happen. But I think flight, because to really see the plane take off and I think just would have been really exciting.
I agree. I absolutely agree. God, those were great. Okay. And then last one will be, a person, this could be, I'll widen it out. It could be, someone from fiction or someone from reality. Again, if there's some crossover with these things that you've listed, that's fine. But, somebody who is like your buddy that you would not normally get to be buddies with. So it could be someone contemporary, but it could also be,
Yes, Amelie was my hero. There's an amazing Australian TV show called Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries. Have you seen it?
Is it on Netflix?
Yeah, and
Does she have like a brown bob?
Oh,
she's
adorable.
And red lips?
Yes,
I need to get into that because I am looking for a new mystery series.
I'm in love with her.
I like gentle mysteries.
It's a gentle mystery. It's my favorite thing.
All right,
like
I'm
it is the only
down.
TV show that I'm like, Yuri, can we watch it? Like,
I'm ready. I'm so ready to get into Miss Fisher.
That would be one.
Awesome.
And you said it could be a real person too.
Yeah,
Carl Sagan.
Oh God. Absolutely. Ugh, Miss Fisher. I got so excited about Miss Fisher.
You have to watch it because I love it so much. Not that I expect everyone to love what I love,
but Carl could call you and just be like, "I'm just wondering how you are."
I would probably just burst into tears.
I know, me too.
You know those remixes of the songs that they did of like his and Mr. Rogers and all those. Whenever I'm having a bad day and like Yuri knows I'm having a bad day, he puts it on.
Yeah.
And then that song comes on, I just like totally burst into tears. Not that it's not like happy tears, but it's just like, I'm like, just be my friend.
I know. Yeah. I love that song so much. I'm sure I've talked about it on the podcast before, but if I have, it's been a while. I don't even remember who the guy is that like does all of those.
I know.
But that, the one
but it's
that,
for PBS, right?
I don't know. Is it? Oh, I only just like found, like someone just sent me a clip of it and I was like,
maybe
I need
PBS
to immediately
reposts
download
them because I feel like Yuri goes to YouTube and finds PBS some things and it's all of those.
Yeah.
Because it's Julia Childs and like there's all sorts of
I'm trying
ones.
To think of the ones I've heard. I've barely heard any except for like the two Carl Sagan's, the main one.
Carl Sagan's great. And
every time when he says, if we do not destroy ourselves, we will one day travel. I'm like, that's the part where I'm like, I can listen to this without getting choked.
I can't.
So
I never
beautiful.
Can. And what's his name? Bob Ross, the painter. Have you heard his?
No. Oh, God. I need to
that one's
that
so good because it's a happy little cloud. Like, he's so cute. He's
I
just
have heard
little,
that one. I have heard
sweet.
That one.
There are no limits here. Start out by believing here. Like, it's just so sweet.
That's so
it's just
good.
Such a sweet.
Boy, I really, really like this. Okay. And now I'm just going to do this like little design thing that will dictate for me what my eeny meeny is like.
Okay.
So I'm just going to ask you to just tell me when to stop. Okay.
Okay. Stop.
Okay. I'm going to pause this, do some calculations.
Oh, this is so exciting.
And I'm going to come back with you. There really is no calculating to it. 100% guaranteed MASH fictional future.
Perfect.
When I come back,
I can't wait.
I want to reassure you guys it will seem as if no time has passed. But I do need to think of some fun. Because I know there's... I just know that there's something out
there.
Okay,
well, when you think of it, let me know because I will be eager to see.
But in the meantime, I will share this marvelous MASH future with you.
I'm very excited.
First of all, I want to congratulate you on your house in Tuscany.
Oh, I'm so excited. That makes
really
me quite
well
happy.
Done.
I'm very
really
happy
well
with that.
Done.
Yes.
I want to also congratulate you. Now, listen, I understand that Harissa is not made in Tuscany, but that's what's so magical about this game is that you snap of a finger.
It's delicious.
It's sitting right in
you
front
can
of
eat
you
it in
as
Tuscany?
You look over the sea.
Yes, and you look at the beautiful trees.
Wait, can you see any sea in Tuscany, or can you just see
no?
Beautiful
I thought
vineyards?
You meant like the Sea of Rolling Hills. It's
the
kind of
the Sea
like,
of vineyards.
Vineyards, yeah. The
I
green and
Tuscany.
Yellow, and
I've been there, so I really don't have a reason. You know why? Because people say Amalfi Coast a lot. So in my mind, suddenly I was imagining Tuscany. Was
Amalfi
on the...
Coast is lovely. I could maybe take a day trip over there.
You
if
could
we
easily
needed to.
Take a day trip.
Yes.
And by the way, I want to reassure you that if there are any elevators in that day trip. You needn't fear.
Oh, thank goodness.
No, you have nothing
to
worry
really
about.
Honestly the best thing I could get rid of as a fear because that would be delightful.
Just tuck that one right into your brain because that one I think is going to travel into your real life.
I love that.
I want to congratulate you on, and also, you know another place I never see elevators? Harry Potter's world. That's just a lot of stairs, baby.
That is.
So you're going to be on those crazy Escheresque
stairs. I am a happy camper right now.
Yeah, in your wizarding world.
Mm-hmm, I am.
I think that you could probably solve a few wizarding mysteries with your dear friend, Miss Fisher. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
Her.
I love her.
You got her.
Yay.
You have witnessed humans' first flight.
That's lovely.
I want to congratulate you on lifting Tesla's journals, his missing journals. I feel like you probably, speaking of Miss Fisher, detective your own way through some very exciting
science. Yes, we totally
science.
Detected our ways into
you
that.
You detected right in there. Mm-hmm. And then, weirdly, someone who I feel doesn't fit into any of this, Channing Tatum.
Oh my gosh, that's
but
weird.
But you and Yuri can hang out with him.
We can hang out with
all
him.
All the live long day.
That would be delightful.
It's wonderful.
Yuri will just make him dance for us.
We'll just, just have him put on a nice old-fashioned show.
My gosh.
Tara, thank you so much for doing the podcast.
It was delightful.
I've been looking forward to this so much.
It did not
disappoint. I want to encourage people to know you and Yuri wrote a book.
We did.
And anything else that you would like people to know about you? I know
you're
on Twitter, etc.
Yes, I'm on Twitter at Tara Platt. I actually just wrote another book and I'm currently crowdfunding for that, but it's called Zartana. It's an interactive illustrated book of a traveling Romani girl and the recipes pull out and the maps pull out and it's really fully interactive.
That's wonderful.
World building, magical.
Yay! Yes.
So I'm in the process of doing that right now. And then there's lots of always other projects that we're working on with our production company. And
okay. Like so you're at Tara Platt. Yeah.
I'm at Tara Platt.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Guys, check it all out. Boy, I'm really excited about the book that you're working on.
Thank you.
So cool. And can they be a part of the crowdfunding?
Yeah.
Through the month of October.
I mean, it depends when this airs.
No. This will come out. I might even flip flop and put this out earlier.
Oh,
so
awesome.
That I can tell people.
Yeah.
About
I'm at 58% right now.
Okay. We will get you there. It just started on
October 1st.
I'm so excited about fingers this. Fingers crossed. Guys, get into it. Would you do me that favor? and thank you so much.
Thank you. Sarah. It was a pleasure.
Guys, I'll talk to you next time on the podcast. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.